For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Chris Carter. This is the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And today we're going to talk about, one, mini camp is over for the Steelers. They're on their break before training camp begins in late July. But also, we talked to defensive coordinator Terrell Austin, and he talked specifically about some things he would change about how the team was conducted last year on defense versus how he plans to use them this year. Also, George Pickens saying he's going to line up in the slot, what he and new receivers coach Zach Azani have talked about with this unit needs to do more. And, of course, we're also talking about Pittsburgh Pirates. It's Chris Carter here with Brian Batko and Andrew Destin at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Brian Batko, one of our great Steelers beat writers. And as always, you can find the show on your favorite podcasting apps every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also find us on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all of our episodes, as well as the daily content that comes out from all of our Pittsburgh sports writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And as always, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they're right across the street from PNC Park on Federal Street. There were 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. More on them later. Brian, mini camp is done. That means we don't get to see the Steelers again for a few months, but one of the things we've been trying to nail down when we go there is how this team's going to look different from last year. How can they can take a step up? And when we talked to Terrell Austin, he seemed to task himself with needing to put Minkah Fitzpatrick in a better places. And part of that was also using the personnel that they've added, Omar Khan has added in the offseason. What was your takeaway from how Terrell Austin kind of acknowledged some of the problems from last year and how he's going to try to do things differently this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably when he reviewed everything, saw a lot of the same stuff that those of us on the outside were seeing. You know, you try to figure out why a player is savvy and is as athletically talented and gifted as Minkah Fitzpatrick didn't make much of an impact. And in fact, the defense, or at least the team, was less successful when he was out there than when he was. That should never happen. And it probably speaks to, you know, the allocation of roles in the secondary and maybe why they were a little bit out of whack. That could lend itself to the reason for the defense actually, you know, playing better and winning more when he was sidelined. But we all know he's an asset to this team when he's healthy, and he's one of the best safeties in the league when he's healthy. So, yeah, I mean, Terrell Austin was up against it a little bit last year once Keanu Neal went down, and it's like, all right, DeMonte Casey, he's one of your best 11. He's one of your best two safeties. But, you know, he's somebody who's at his size. He kind of needs to play back deep. And then you've got to figure out something else to do with Minkah. And instead of getting him around the ball more, it kind of took him out of the game more. And I thought it was interesting that Austin said that some of those deep completions by opposing teams were balls thrown that if Minkah Fitzpatrick were back there, bigger body, more of a instinctual player, then those balls probably don't even get thrown, let alone completed. So that was a puzzle last year that I don't think they necessarily had the pieces in the right place. And, you know, maybe Terrell Austin didn't even have the right pieces to work with. So they tried to change that this offseason, bringing in Deshaun Elliott, much more of a traditional, you know, strong safety, hard hitter, coming up in the box, covering tight ends man-to-man, whereas Minka should be allowed to go back to patrolling center field, if you will. And that could elevate this defense to, you know, the top five unit that I thought they could have been and should have been last year, that, you know, obviously wasn't really in their grasp due to injuries and some other factors outside of their control.
I think that's a big part of this is, you know, if the injuries that happened last year happened to this year's team, they may be better suited for it, but it will hamper what they're trying to do right now with reconstructing things. And, you know, you talked about the addition of Patrick Queen, the drafting of Peyton Wilson, the addition of Dante Jackson, the signing of Cameron Sutton, and the signing of Deshaun Elliott, all of those things. And we've talked about this before on the show, but all of those things are things that kind of relay into what Minka Fitzpatrick did away from being the ranging free safety guy last year, because he played in the slot, he played dimebacker, he played linebacker, he played outside corner even at times, and it was to try and help in all these different places. The Steelers had obvious holes they needed to fill, and now if these signings and draft picks work out, maybe they've filled these holes, or at least made these holes less of a liability, so that Minka Fitzpatrick can get back to what he does best. And also, like, I think even beyond the liability standpoint, but also on the standpoint of, I think that some of these players could actually be pretty good at their jobs, especially like a guy like Patrick Queen and a guy like Deshaun Elliott. I think that they are significant upgrades from what the Steelers had at those positions. And those are two areas that work in the middle part of the defense that can, if they handle their positions well, that you know, Minka Fitzpatrick gets freed up a lot more, and that can make the Steelers defense be elite. And they finished sixth in scoring last year, despite all the things that they went through, but certainly they had plenty of struggles that throughout the year that they had to kind of correct. And that's why I think it's going to be really interesting for Terrell Austin with the additions that he's made. What else do we see that's different from the Steelers defense when we get to see them and start playing in September?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I learned at OTAs and minicamp was just the rapport that Patrick Queen and Deshaun Elliott have. I mean, I knew they knew each other. They'd played together in Baltimore, I think 3 years ago, Queen's first 2 years with the Ravens, but I didn't realize those two were that close. Elliott said a big reason why he even wanted to sign here was once he saw Patrick Queen was coming here, he wanted to play with his friend again. So they'll have that kind of, you know, easy, seamless chemistry in the middle of the defense, you know, passing guys off, you know, being able to communicate probably with a look even more than needing to say any words. They hang out together a lot away from the field. They enjoy each other's company. They enjoy chirping each other and being competitive in these practice settings when they need to be. So we know that Minka is not really the most vocal guy. I think he's, you know, whether on the field or off the field, I think it's a lot of just, hey, I'm here. I'm doing my own thing. I'm taking my notes, studying, sharpening my mental game. And, you know, he plays that way as well. You know, I'll be back here in the deep post. Come try me if you want. I'll have your back if you're a defender in front of me, and I'll pick off a pass if it gets over your head. Whereas Elliott and Queen can kind of, you know, take care of some of that middle of the field stuff. Obviously, track down ball carriers, get off of blocks, and let's not write off Elandon Roberts either. And he's a holdover from last season, of course. But, you know, if anything got better with age, and his age 29 season turned in more than 100 tackles for the second straight year and made the Steelers look pretty smart for signing him in free agency after the Dolphins let him walk.
Absolutely. And I think that there's still a lot of things that need to happen for this defense. And he talked about, you know, some of the younger players that he feels like, you know, could be different this year. You know, he talked about, you know, they might use Joey Porter Jr. to follow number one receiver, but they might not because of just matchup situations. He talked about how DeMarvin Leal looks a lot better, or at least more in shape and more in tune with what the team needs from him in these OTAs and minicamp than he did last year. And granted, I don't mean nothing until the pads go on and we got to see if he does anything. But
Terrell Austin doesn't usually hesitate to sort of
shoot
you straight if somebody's not looking good or not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
He will let us know
if right.
He's like, that so, guy I mean, needs hey, a bit more work.
Yeah, so take that for what it's worth, and maybe he will be singing a different tune once, because he did preface it all by saying, look, it's football in shorts. I'm not really taking much away from this or fully evaluating guys till we get to Latrobe and see what they can do with the pads on. maybe he'll be singing a different tune, or you know, being a little bit more realistic about players and their opportunities come August. But yeah, at least for right now, glowing reviews of just about everybody he was asked to talk to speak on Wednesday.
We're going to have a lot more time over the next month or so before training camp to get into the depth of this defense. And I think there's a lot of angles to cover here, but I want to switch to the offense in the next segment, because George Pickens spoke this week and he talked about playing in the slot. And I want to talk about what that might look like and how Zach Azani's talked about him and the other receivers he's been working with the Steelers. We'll do that next here on the North Shore Drive podcast for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Brian Bacco. But first, I want to remind you that the North Shore Drive podcast is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, you can go there on the North Shore of Pittsburgh. You can sit outside or you can sit inside, but you sit outside, you can see the wonderful skyline of downtown Pittsburgh. You can be right across the street from PNC Park. But when you're in there, you're seeing they have over 20 televisions. You can catch whatever sporting event that you're missing out on somewhere else. You can also enjoy one of their 500 different available beers. 300 of those local beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap at all times. And they're always switching new ones in and out, so you're always getting new experiences every time you go to Mike's Beer Bar. And they also have amazing food like steak on a stone, where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. You cut a piece off, you press it into the stone, and you choose how well done you want every single bite of your steak. It's the best bar of Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today, and when you get there, tell them Chris sent you. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Brian Batko. Brian, George Pickens spoke this past week, and he talked about working more in the slot as a receiver this season. And that drew some interesting eyes, because I felt like, if anything, all the other receivers around him in the depth chart are guys that are suited for the slot, whether it's Roman Wilson or Calvin Austin or Scotty Miller. These are all smaller guys that are quicker and more typical for the slot role in an offense. And so, Brian, when you heard that, did you kind of wonder, like, well, wait a minute, who's going to play on the outside if George is in the slot?
I mean, a little bit, but I do think that, you know, even going back to last season and in the year before with the Pickens-Austin draft class and, you know, what they were trying to do with those two, the previous offensive regime. I mean, I think they want all these receivers to be interchangeable. And I think you're seeing that across the NFL as well. You know, it's good to have defined roles for sure, but that also makes it a little bit easier on the defense when they always know who's going to be lining up where. So, you know, that was always kind of an odd thing to me with Deontay Johnson. I mean, he really prided himself on being a true X receiver. And yes, he thrived in that spot, getting open. But he never really offered as much versatility as I thought somebody with his skill set could. Maybe we'll see that now more with George Pickens. I mean, to hear him the other day, you'd have thought he'd never played a snap in the slot in his life the last couple of years. But you know, I think the percentages were like 13% as a rookie and 16% last year. Still not a lot, but you know, give Matt Canada / Eddie Faulkner / Mike Sullivan some credit for working him in there occasionally. And he had some big plays out of there in 2023. I will specifically remember the one on Mike Hilton down in Cincinnati, where they got him matched up with the former Steelers nickel corner, and Pickens burned him on just kind of a simple slot fade down the field. So, I mean, it's a good club to have in his bag. I wasn't really sure if he was looking to do more of that. I wouldn't have been shocked either if he said, no, just kind of like the Minka Fitzpatrick thing. Like, no, just keep me on the outside. I'll win there one-on-one, and that's where I'm best able to help the team. But, you know, I guess I'll give George some credit for being willing to move around. And, you know, selfishly, I'm sure, yeah, he wants to get the safeties on him and the occasional even linebacker on him, because he knows he can simply outrun those guys and make them look silly. Now it'll be, I think Matt Canada, you know, he stressed trying to get mismatches too. He wasn't, you know, wasn't an idiot. I mean, he tried, but I think like everything as an offensive coordinator and play caller, it boils down to like, do you have the right feel for when to do that? Do you have the sense of how the game is unfolding? Are you a step ahead of the opposing defensive play caller? And I think the proof's in the pudding now that oftentimes he wasn't enough. So maybe Arthur Smith will be better equipped to do that, whether it's with Pickens, whether it's with scheming things up for Calvin Austin, who I think had a really good spring. Zach Azani, the new receivers coach, did not temper his praise whatsoever for Austin, and we witnessed it, observed, and saw it as well. Chris being there pretty much every day, it looks like he's ready to take another step in year three, really kind of year two for him. So I think depending on the formation, you know, Arthur Smith, I think will use a lot of pre-snap motion as well. That seems like something that's on his to-do list here in 2024. You want to use it with purpose, though, not just for the sake of doing it, but you'll see Pickens maybe lined up inside occasionally. Then let's say you've got Van Jefferson on as one outside receiver, Calvin Austin as the other. Maybe he can just run a go and clear things out, forcing a corner, maybe even a safety to keep up with him. And Pat Freiermuth, you have to account for him as well, because he's been really active and really looked good this spring, coming off somewhat of another injury plagued season for him. So yeah, I mean, it's all, there are encouraging signs there for the Steelers offense, even if, you know, on paper the personnel looks like it still might be lacking one playmaker. I told Mark Kahn and company believe the whole can be greater than the sum of its parts, at least to the extent that they're not going to overpay for another wide receiver, you know, at this stage of the game, at least.
I want to get back to, you know, Zach Azani, the new Steelers wide receivers coach. By the way, you can see a lot of the clips of our interviews and scrums with the Steelers players and coaches on our YouTube page. If you're watching this on YouTube, just click on our YouTube page itself, and you can see all the different. And in fact, we got a really nice long discussion with Zach Azani about several of the Steelers receivers, and you know, he had a lot of praise. He said, one, George Pickens is adapting to a lot of the little detail things. He's challenging him in these practices, and that's a good thing. But he said that Calvin Austin, he said Calvin's been here. He's here now. And, you know, if you're listening, I just put my hands a lot higher. But he said Calvin Austin's been taking serious steps forward. Roman Wilson, who's that interview's also up on our YouTube page. He said that Calvin Austin's been kind of like leading by in the effort department as far as the wide receivers. Roman Wilson, the rookie, you know, I think admittedly he's like, hey, like I'm hearing Zach Azani in my sleep right now, because Zach is a very hands-on guy. But I also think that style of coaching is kind of what this group may need, Brian. Like this is a young receiving group for the most part, at least the top three guys that you're hoping to develop in Pickens, Austin, and Wilson. You know, these are all guys that they haven't, like Pickens is known in the NFL, but he hasn't made his real footprint yet, I think, of what he wants to be in the NFL. Austin's still figuring out how he fits in the NFL, and Wilson's a rookie. And I think it might be really refreshing and good for these receivers to have a guy that gets up in their face. And like when you watch him in practice, he's slamming his hands and feet on the ground to try to say, I need your feet at this pace. I need you to do this at this time. And that kind of challenge might pull more out of these rookies and get them suited for the game a bit faster.
Yeah, I mean, the previous two wide receivers coaches here, Frisman Jackson and Ike Hilliard, you know, they brought their own strengths to the table, that in-helmet experience. They both played in the NFL. Ike Hilliard, obviously a very good professional wide receiver, but I don't know if there was as much hard coaching. I don't know if they were quite as hands-on with these guys, and maybe they didn't have to be with some of the talent and the vets that they had in the room at the time. But yeah, I mean, sure seems like with the Steelers hiring of Zach Azani, it was to change the culture a little bit with that group. And, you know, Roman Wilson, there's going to be some growing pains, obviously, off the bat. Didn't expect him to come in right away and make a seamless transition, even as a third round pick who was pretty accomplished in college last year with the national champs at Michigan. They aren't taking it easy on him. You know, they aren't taking it easy on Pickens either, I don't think, based on Azani saying, hey, everything's right there for him. You know, all the talent in the world, he just needs to go grab it, essentially. So, I mean, you do want to see that work ethic improve from year to year. Somebody like Calvin Austin, I mean, we know he works his tail off. You know, his rookie year, just he went down, he got hurt. There wasn't a lot that he could do. And last year, I think he tried what he could do to position himself to be better. But other than a glimpse here and there, such as in Vegas, didn't really all materialize for him in what was a disjointed, dysfunctional season for the offense until the final month or so. But yeah, I mean, encouraging signs from him, you know, guys like Van Jefferson, Quez Watkins, Scotty Miller, you know, I think you'll throw the ball out there at Latrobe and see who kind of separates himself from the pack. But yeah, I mean, there's really a delineated sense of who is what in that group, with Pickens being the top dog and Austin kind of being, you know, in that second fiddle area, Roman Wilson fighting for everything he gets. And then the veterans, you know, getting that chance to stand out, and you just hope somebody separates through training camp and the preseason with their performance.
Absolutely. I think there's still a lot to look at what these receivers could be. And like you talked about earlier, I think that the question as far as which if they're going to get a receiver and which receiver they'd want to get in a trade in the trade market kind of gets answered by how these guys show up in training camp and how they feel that they are. Because if you feel like you might have a number two, you might not need to trade. If you feel like you have a number three with a, you know, or two number threes and feel like, oh, you need a guy, maybe you feel like you don't need to get as serious wide receiver, or maybe you feel like none of the guys behind George Pickens are ready to really contribute. And so then you do got to go get a really big name wide receiver in the NFL. But all that is stuff I think that they're going to end up trying to work out more so in a month and a half when they show up in Latrobe.
Yeah. I mean, even a couple or a few, sort of NFL journeymen, if you will, like Denzel Mims and Dez Fitzpatrick and Marquez Callaway. I mean, they've made plays at this level and they're capable of making plays. So they'll be kind of like the sleepers when we get to training camp next month. But yeah, I mean, this group doesn't necessarily lack depth. It's just a matter of how much star power is there at the top, enough to kind of keep the heat off of George Pickens from opposing defenses. I don't know. I mean, we always hear the Steelers discuss how talented he is. Other teams are going to know that as well. So, and they know they can probably get under his skin if they're taking the ball away from him. So it's going to be a team effort, obviously, from everybody there. We know that's still going to be a run first mentality anyway. Mm-hmm. Players talking about trying to be the most physical offense in the NFL. I'm sure Pittsburgh is not the only city where they're talking about that in the locker room and in meetings, but they've maybe got the pieces in place now to do that, and the identity to try to do that. The coaching from the top down with Mike Tomlin and Arthur Smith instilling that in them. All they've invested in the O-line, arguably the best running back tandem in the league. So mm-hmm. maybe the passing game is kind of on the back burner to begin with. But certainly you're going to need to keep defenses honest, and you know you're going to need to have that component to your offense no matter what.
Absolutely. He's Brian Batko of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, one of our great Steelers beat writers. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. We got to switch topics. When we come back, we're going to talk with Andrew Destin about
the Destiny's Pittsburgh Child.
Destiny, yeah. I love that. That's his nickname. But Andrew Destin covered the Pirates throughout their road trip. I wanted to talk to him about what he's seen with the Pirates. We'll do that all here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But first, I'll remind you, the show is also sponsored by Moon Township Honda, which you can find on 5802 University Boulevard and moonhonda.com. Here's our message from our sponsors at Moon Township Honda.
To build the Honda CR-V hybrid, we took everything you love about the CR-V and kicked it up a notch with greater power for a CR-V unlike any before. Adventure confidently with Honda, car and driver's most awarded brand in 10 best history. The CR-V and CR-V Hybrid, part of the Honda line of rugged vehicles. Visit your local Honda dealer for new vehicles or arriving daily. Buy online or reserve from select Honda dealers.
We're back here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We now switch to the Pittsburgh Pirates, and that's covered by Andrew Destin, one of our great Pirates beat reporters here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And Andrew just got done with being in St. Louis, and now the Pirates, after losing 2 out of 3 in St. Louis, they one of those came with a not so great start from Mitch Keller, as far as you know, an outing that he uncharacteristically didn't perform well in. And I wanted to ask you, Andrew, and Mitch Keller, you know, as much as people are excited about Paul Skeens and Jared Jones and the young guys, Mitch Keller has been an ace for the Pirates this year. He has been fantastic. Did you see what happened in his start against the Cardinals as more of a bump in the road, or maybe was there anything that worried you there about how things could continue for him this season?
No, not too much. I mean, for me, I first off just think that it was a bump in the road. Give up 4 runs in 6 innings, obviously that's not great, but a couple of points to make there. First, he still covered six innings, which when he doesn't have his best stuff, that shows you what he's still able to do for this staff, is that he can go deep in pretty much any game, just given his repertoire, his build, his ability to go deep with the pitch count because he's been built up for a few years. So he still did what was kind of essential and required of him. So that's first thing. The second is, really, this start could have been a lot different if he just makes two better pitches. Both the home runs were on cutters, and the cutter isn't his best pitch, but neither of them were particularly bad pitches. One was a 3-2 cutter that caught a little bit too much of the plate, and the one that Nolan Gorman hit, Mitch Keller said afterwards that he actually felt was one of the better cutters he threw on the day. So not remotely worried about it. It was more an aberration than anything. It was something to write about and certainly something to monitor because it was so weird to see that. I think Mitch Keller's ERA over his previous six starts was 1.13. He had been excellent starting with that complete game, one-run ball against the Angels back on May 6th. So he had been pitching so well. I don't look at this as anything to concern about too much. And to your point, Chris, he's been arguably their best pitcher all season, and that's no disservice to Paul Skeens or to Jared Jones. It's just he's done it start in, start out. When he hasn't been great, it hasn't been a spiral of a performance. Like, he hasn't had one that's truly been an ugly 8 runs, 3 innings that the guy can't get out of the fourth inning and you have to pull him early. Like, even when he doesn't have his best stuff, he can pitch to soft contact. Yeah, he's going to give up a good number of hits, but that's just a matter of him being smart with his pitch count and recognizing, hey, like, I got to get deep in this game for the team, given the status of the bullpen, or just frankly, because he knows that's his responsibility as a starting pitcher. And I think we're just seeing that this was not his best, but certainly far from his worst.
Yeah, and it wasn't like he got obliterated in this game. He just didn't shut it completely down. The Cardinals ended up winning 4-3. It did cut off a 6-game win streak. Whenever he took the mound, the Pirates had been winning, dating back to early May. But looking at that, and the Pirates dropped the series against the Cardinals. They're now back down into last place of the NL Central. But as you and I have been talking about, that kind of is very relative to just the fact that the NL Central is all kind of outside of the Brewers, who are way ahead in the division. Everyone's kind of hovering around themselves. Like, even the Cardinals, who just beat the Pirates in the series, they're still a game below 500. The Pirates are 4 games below 500, and they're still just a game and a half back of the Cardinals themselves. And then there's the wild card chase, where they're a game and a half back because the Cardinals themselves are right up there with the Giants as far as teams vying to be wild card teams. So I think it's interesting to see, again, just the fact that everything is really kind of huddled up on itself as far as this. But do you think, when you look at this, is there any other signs of any other teams that you think maybe could fall out of contention and make this a little bit less of a thick pack very soon?
No, I mean, it's tough to say. And I think the Cardinals-Pirates series I'm going to use as like the perfect data point, because it just showed how, and this is no disservice to either team, how perfectly mediocre both those teams are and how perfectly mediocre most of those teams jumbled up there are. It's not like this is, the AFC North, to use a football analogy, where it's, all the teams are pegged as some of the best in the league and they're all beating up on each other, or like the Big Ten East or something like that. This is a matter of all these teams have their flaws, have their warts, and I think that just means that they're going to be trading blows, trading punches. I mean, look at it this way. The Pirates in 3 games against the St. Louis Cardinals scored 7 runs. The Cardinals starting pitching is fine. It's good. Sonny Gray had a good pitching at performance, and Lance Lynn did what Lance Lynn has done this year, which is cover, 4-plus innings and give up maybe a run or 2 runs or something and then get pulled. The Pirates just couldn't do much of anything against the bullpen. And Miles Michaelis nearly, threw a perfect game against them, having 7 innings of 1-hit ball. So I bring up that data point, and I bring up this series to say that the St. Louis Cardinals are very top-heavy and not deep. The Pittsburgh Pirates, in a lot of ways, are very top-heavy and not terribly deep, because it's all about the starting pitching, a couple of position players, and a solid back end of your bullpen. The way that these teams are structured, I think the only way that we see anybody fall out of contention is a very serious injury, and I'm not wishing that on anybody, but that's how a team falls out, is, let's say, any one of these NL West teams, like if the Giants pitching staff, they lose 2 more guys to the IL, like a Blake Snell continues having the injury plagued year and Logan Webb gets injured, then yeah, that might be the kiss of death for the Giants. And I think that kind of rationale applies to all these teams. So I think it's too early to say that anybody's falling out of contention or anybody's a prime candidate for it. I think the reality is just that none of these teams are particularly deep. The margin for error is that thin, and it means as they play each other, they're all just going to beat up on each other.
The Pirates have their upcoming series on the road against the Colorado Rockies before returning home to face the Reds and the Rays. The Reds and the Rays kind of hovering right around the same kind of record as the Pirates, sub 500, but not too far below, both in the wild card chase in their own leagues. But the Rockies are one of the worst teams in baseball right now as far as their record. Is this a series you feel like the Pirates have to sweep if they're going to try to make, you know, make any moves here to stay in the hunt or get back ahead of the pack when in the wild card chase, and also make it clear to management to be like, hey, like, this team is, it can be a team that does win out in this race if you just invest in it at the trade deadline?
Hey, you got to win at least two. Yeah, you can't drop two out of three to the Rockies and have it be a 2-4 road trip. Like, that can't happen. The sweep would be nice. It's probably asking a lot. And it's probably asking a lot given how the starting rotation is going to look this series. Looks like it's going to be a bullpen day tonight against the Rockies, Jared Jones on Saturday, and might be a bullpen game, or they call up, say, Dalton Jeffries from AAA Indianapolis to make a spot start with Paul Skeens getting pushed back to Monday. So the way that I look at it is, in theory, it's the Rockies. They're not good. Their bullpen is the worst in baseball. Their starting rotation is not particularly good. But the Pirates aren't going to be putting out their best threat in terms of the starting rotation, save Jared Jones, who gives them obviously a great chance whenever he takes the mound on Saturday. So, this is an important series. It's the Rockies. They're not good. They're the worst team in the National League, arguably. It's them fighting against the Marlins. That being said, this isn't the perfect way that it's set up for the Pirates. Their offense, their bats are going to need to come alive, and maybe this is a get-me-right series, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, you can read all about it at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us here on the North Shore Drive podcast. And you can read all his work at post-gazette.com, as well as all of our work at post-gazette.com. And you can also hear and watch him with Noah Hiles, our other great Pirates beat reporter, with him, as they have video and audio content on our podcasting channels, just like we have video and audio content here for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and our sports department. Thanks again for tuning into the North Shore Drive podcast. And thanks for Ryan Batko for also joining us. I'm your host, Chris Carter. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Carter Critiques. Read my work here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, post-gazette.com. And remember to subscribe to this channel to get all the Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast, as well as all the daily content we produce here. We'll see you again here Monday here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.